Welcome to the Conquer Your Draft podcast, where fantasy champions are made. Welcome back to the Conquer Your Draft fantasy football podcast. I'm Josh, and with me as always is Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Good. I watched Draft Day again, getting set for the draft next week, because I'm getting in draft fever. So.
Yes. I'm going to have to rewatch that too. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's such a good, it just, I don't know, it's perfectly, to me, it just perfectly captures the ideas of what I think go on behind the scenes when drafting. And I love the draft. I think it's kind of cool to kind of speculate where players could go. And sometimes you even get deals and stuff, which obviously makes it more exciting. But I think it's with our theme of rookies this week and with the fact that we're kind of talking about the draft and everything that will be happening at the draft next week, it's that time of season. So it's kind of cool to be diving into draft fever.
Yeah, I'm trying to tamper my expectations until draft day and like the moves start happening. Like I want to keep the excitement high. I don't want to like light my fire too early and burn out and then kind of be exhausted by draft day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep myself distracted, trying to, you know, okay, let's pump our brakes. We probably know what the first few picks are going to be after that. It's going to be a free for all. There's going to be some moves. Let's just see what happens. But I think today's episode of looking back at last year's rookies will be a good simmer. Good. Just relax. Look at how badly this went for some of them.
Yeah. And that was a fun draft last year too. Like the beginning had a lot of excitement, and like, there's a couple of these players that I can kind of remember people kind of talking about, oh yeah, they're good, and this is what they could do, this is what they could do. And a lot of, there's just so many players that I think exceeded some expectations, where you can talk at them and look back and be like, you've obviously got someone like Bijan Robinson who we'll talk about. We kind of know what he is, but there's a few receivers who I think had such, definitely were like highly touted, but were drafted a little bit later and did so well that I think teams look back on it being really happy. And that's probably all they want, right? They just want to pick a player like you would in fantasy and have them match or exceed the value of them being selected. So that's kind of fun to look back now and remember what it was like watching that draft. I also have to record the draft this year. I got to do the old PVR recording because I'm going to be unfortunately out that night.
I gotta figure out how I'm gonna watch it, because I don't have cable where I am, so I gotta find a way to stream it.
There's definitely gonna be streams available.
Yeah, I just gotta sort out, like, is it something I'm gonna have to watch on my phone? Can I get it on my TV? Because like, I have a smart TV, but it only has like certain apps on it. I should be able to figure something out. But that'll be a hurdle for me to cross. Otherwise, I'll just have to follow it live on Twitter or something, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about an event like this. Like, you can get updates on social media, even if you're working, you're out, or you can't do anything. Like, you can maintain updates. So, like, I'm going to do that as well. But I also like to record it, because I like to go back, even if I know what happens. Like, I like to see the moment, you know. Oh, this trade happens. I like to see the moment. To me, it's really exciting to have everyone in the sports world, especially the football world, but sports world's kind of, I find the draft is a really cool moment where everyone's watching the same thing, kind of like the Super Bowl. Like, you get that same sort of feeling.
Yeah. And it just sucks when it's like, my mind goes back to last year with Will Levis and the player that's supposed to go early in the first round, and then like every pick that happens and it's not that player, they're zoned right in on them with the camera, and like, they're just sitting there like sitting on their hands essentially because there's nothing they can do. And yeah, it's just so awkward and uncomfortable. And like, as the like as you get closer to the last pick of the first round and like they haven't been picked yet, just like, oh, is this the pick? No, you suck. Sorry. That part sucks, like with the whole sport world watching, but it is like, aside from probably the Super Bowl, maybe like the conference championships, it's the only time I think that everybody is kind of tuned in on the same thing.
Yeah, because you never, like, games, people have different games. Like, even the, you know, you get like glimpses of it with like Monday Night and Sunday Night Football, but again, it's just not the same where all the teams are also involved, right? Like, no matter who you are, no matter if you're just, if you're just a casual fan, your team's involved in the draft in one way or another. So that I think is kind of unique. Super Bowl is always only two teams. A lot of people enjoy it still, even if your favorite team's not in it, but everyone is at the draft, has some sort of a stake. And even if your team doesn't have a first round draft pick or has later picks, whatever, you know, trades happen and things still happen. And you know, in the second and third round, you always get these gem players who end up going off and having good seasons. And you just sit there going, is this going to be the one? Like, am I going to be remembering this name come like September, October? So yeah, it's, I do think it's really cool to have the focus be here. And for fantasy, you're just sitting back going like, okay, like, will these players be impactful? What will this mean? What will, you know, do you see, can you start making bold predictions on where things are going to go? It's really cool. There's a lot that can go wrong. There's a lot that can go right. And that's, I think, what I love about it.
Now, do you watch past the first round?
Usually first two rounds, I would say, is what I will watch. And then I would just like pay attention to rounds three and beyond. But usually at least the first two. Like, I think last year I watched round one and two. And then I stopped. But I have in past watched the whole thing. I have.
I think last year I only watched the first round because I think I was working. Like, I was off the night of the first round. And then I think I was working after that.
Yeah, it's usually in the past, it's been like the next day during the
day. Yeah.
Which does make it complicated. But I in the past, if I'm available, I will watch the whole thing. But I'm pretty sure last year I tuned in for like the first hour of the next day just to watch the second round. And then kind of stopped from there and just kind of kept up with updates.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I am going to be working that weekend, so hopefully I'll be able to kind of just follow along, because I should be able to watch the first round, assuming I can sort out my streaming. I should be off and able to hopefully watch the first round, but I will be working after that, so I might be able to kind of poke at it while I'm working, but probably gonna miss most of it afterwards.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be around for the first round, so I'm definitely gonna record it, but the next day I might be able to get away to do like watch a couple little bit of it. But yeah, this is definitely the first year in a while where I'm just so happen to be busy at the same time. But you know, that's the way it goes. You know, you gotta, instead of sitting back and watching football and being happy, I have to go do things and be miserable. So
that's life.
That's life. That is the definition of life.
All right, well, let's dive into our news, because we got quite a bit of rookies to go through. So just in case if you missed it, we are going to be looking back at the 2023 rookie class and just basically going over how they did in terms of fantasy in the 2023 season. And we all went over quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. But first, just two quick pieces of news. So the Cleveland Browns and running back Nick Chubb have agreed to a lower reworked contract of $11.7 million for 2024, which secures Chubb's place on the roster and helps the team out financially, which is, I guess, good news in a way of they probably wouldn't have kept him on the team if he wasn't going to play this year.
Right.
They probably would have just cut him, because I don't think they had any obligation to keep him. And he's not retired, so it's not like it was a career-ending injury either. But if they're not willing to pay him what they originally were going to, that probably means that his they're not expecting him to be able to do the same things that he did before, which is understandable given how catastrophic that knee injury was. So it seems like Chubb will be available at some point this season, but at an at a reduced expectation of performance, if that
they're
makes
being
sense.
They're being kind of coy though. Like, we haven't heard for sure what even his status is, have we? Like, they're not being super.
No, they haven't said anything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they haven't said a word. But at least it's good for Nick Chubb. He's getting some money. Obviously not what he originally was going to get this year, but considering like he could have been getting $0 this year, I mean, it's still a pretty good deal for him. But yeah, the team has not released anything about what his status is, when he's expected to be ready by, what's going on there. So I'd say he's probably going to be one of the riskiest running backs to take in fantasy this year, because you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Other piece of news is the Philadelphia Eagles have agreed to a 3-year, $75 million extension with $51 million guaranteed with wide receiver Devonta Smith. So him and AJ Brown will be continuing their duo this upcoming season, and the Eagles clearly have faith that Devonta Smith will be a part of their future moving forward for at least the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're in a, I feel like Philadelphia is in one of these positions where I think they feel they're underachieving as an organization. And I think if they don't stabilize things and get some big playoff wins and go on a run here, I think that there's going to be some trouble in Philadelphia. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. They need to make the most of this opportunity with Hurts and Brown and Smith. I don't know what, like, the injuries and just the defensive collapse last year really hurt them, but they need to get their spark back that they had at the start of last season and capitalize on this. They're kind of in the same position as the Bills. Like, this is your chance to go on a run, you know, to get to the Super Bowl, maybe get there a couple of times. But it's not working out. They're kind of the same now. Well, they did make it to the Super Bowl, I suppose. So they're still doing better than the Bills, but they're kind of in the same position. You know, like, if you're going to win a Super Bowl, this is kind of your chance. It's like the Rams a few years ago.
Yeah.
They kind of went all out, just basically sold the farm to get talent, ended up winning a Super Bowl, and then now they're kind of stuck trying to get back to where they were. The Chiefs are in the middle of a dynasty. The Patriots were in one for a while. Every now and then, like, the stars align for your team, and you have a chance to go on a run for multiple years, but you gotta take advantage of it. I think the Bills are on the tail end of their window, and they haven't done much with it yet. And the Eagles, I think, they're kind of at the apex of it. You know, like, this year, next year, if things don't go well for them, I think they're going to start declining, and the window's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I definitely think the Bills are in much worse position, and the Bills might be comparable to the Eagles now, like, you know, the Bills 2 years ago, and things have just started to decline. And one of the things about when you re-sign players like this, and when you do that, it's like, okay, you're trying to extend your window, but I don't know. I find, unless you really do have a dynasty team, your window is only a couple of years. And I definitely feel like Philadelphia, it's starting to close. I definitely wouldn't put them, like you're saying, in the Bills category, but I would say that they're in tough. They're in tough for the next couple of years. They've got to really get some things going. They've got to put a nice run together here. Because yeah, that they're going to start seeing some, I think, major issues and changes if they don't. But again, I've liked some of the moves they've made. That it's not as though they're not trying, they're not taking a look, and even re-signing players and stabilizing, your team offensively and defensively. Like that's good. That's what you want. We'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, I think they have a good shot. I agree with you too. I think the Bills are almost past their prime. I think this might be their last kind of kick of the can, especially now that Diggs is gone. But yeah, if the Eagles are going to do it, I'd say they're 1 year behind the Bills. You know, if they don't do it this year, next year is going to be their kind of potential final call. And then after that, I mean, I would say there's a chance maybe some coaching changes or some of these offensive players are going to want out, go somewhere else where they think they can win. Like, there's going to be some changes, and I think the window is going to come slamming shut.
Yeah.
The 49ers are kind of, I don't know, the 49ers always kind of seem to be like in the weird middle part of that window, like all the time, though. They're always a super competitive team, but just can't get it done. I don't know what it is. Like, they always have an unreal season, get to the playoffs, and then things go wrong. And it's been that way for a couple of seasons now, I think. And I feel like it was back not that long ago before. Like, they had a bit of a run where it was the same thing. Like, they were a team that was difficult to beat and then never went anywhere in the playoffs. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm very interested to see where both of those teams go and where the Bills go this season moving forward, especially after this draft.
And who could replace some of these teams? You know, like, who are the up-and-coming teams that could start to put their name in there?
I thought Miami was going to be that team that kind of took over for the Bills, right?
Yep.
And that just never happened. So, there certainly are teams out there that could, like, be the up-and-coming teams. Like, the Browns have an outside shot at doing it. The Falcons.
If the Browns can find that stability at quarterback, they'll be in good shape. Like, if they can get that quarterback room stabilized. But, the Falcons are going to be an interesting one this year. They will. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love football. I'm so excited. These guys, these teams, there's so many teams. Like, the path is there. It could be a great season competitive football. I hope it works out. Let's dive back into last year and the rookies, how they did last year. We had some who were outstanding, some who honestly I forgot existed because they didn't do anything. So I had to go and double check what teams they play for. It's like, oh, right. Yes. Okay. But we'll start with the quarterbacks. And up first, we have Anthony Richardson of the Indianapolis Colts, who finished as the fantasy quarterback 41. I don't know, maybe you feel differently. For me, he's the most interesting of the rookies, in my opinion, because of how little we got to see of him, but how much of an impact he had in the time that we did see him.
When did he get injured again?
I think it was after his fourth game.
Yeah. I just feel like the sample size is too small. Like, I get what you're saying. And, like, okay, so when he's playing, he was showing flashes. And I think I even said that during the year. I feel like the sample size for him is so small. And I worry when young players get injured either consistently at the beginning of their career or in the first season, because I don't know if it's like, well, that's a fluke, it'll be fine. Or is this player suddenly injury plagued and they're going to have this problem? Like, he plays the style of game that's so easy to get hurt.
Yes. I don't think he's going to be able to continue that style of play because he missed week 3 with, what was it, a concussion, I think. And then in week 5, he went out with the shoulder AC joint sprain, whatever it was that he had. And both of them are a result of playing that essentially run first style of quarterback. He was out. He was getting more carries. I were getting the same amount of carries, it seemed like, as the running back in some of those games. So that style of play, I don't think, can continue. So, yeah, maybe that'll impact his fantasy value. You know, maybe he's just an average fantasy quarterback after that. But there's no doubt that the running game is what was making him such a powerful figure.
Yeah.
Because he was averaging over 22 points a game.
Well, and that's the most valuable kind of quarterback for fantasy, frankly. I mean, if you can have a quarterback who can hurt you with the legs and the arm, I mean, if he is a, you know, a light version of Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, well, then there you go. Like, that's a very valuable quarterback. He has to be playing, though, to be able to, yes, to get that value.
Yeah. Yeah, which those guys do. But those guys also, the coaches use them a bit smarter and essentially only use their legs on scrambles now.
That's right.
So maybe he can still make it work adopting that kind of a play style. Maybe he can't. Hopefully we get to find out with a full season from him this year.
Yeah.
Bryce Young with the Carolina Panthers finished at quarterback 24, which I was actually shocked it was that high.
I'm surprised that he was that high. I would have guessed lower.
Right? I could have sworn, and now that's in 6-point passing touchdown leagues, but I could have sworn it was going to be much lower, but nope. Bryce Young at number 24. He finished above Joe Burrow by a point.
Another injury-plagued quarterback.
Yes. Yeah. But I was just amazed because he threw only one more touchdown than interceptions on the year. Like, he had a bad year.
He was not doing anything. He's on a terrible team, but anything I did expect good with the hype around him, and I think the Panthers still feel he's their quarterback. If they can put a better team around him, maybe they have better results. But I still, one, I would have expected him to play a bit better than he did and to give numbers a little bit better than he did. And I also, during the year, that's a higher ranking than I would have thought. I would have guessed he was much lower because he was never really on my radar. He was never really doing anything spectacular. So yeah, that's shocking to hear that he even made it to 24.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the quarterback who went right after him in the draft, CJ Stroud, Houston Texans, finished quarterback 11 overall. See, I thought he finished a bit higher than that, so that also surprised me. But maybe that's just because of how good of a season he was having. I just assumed he finished higher.
Right.
But he had over 4,100 passing yards. He had over 20 passing touchdowns. He had a couple of rushing touchdowns. He was basically everything people thought the NFL was getting from Bryce Young with the first overall pick. Instead, it was the Texans who got that, with equally not really well-equipped offenses. It just worked out for the Texans, didn't work out for the Panthers.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see the trajectory of these, I guess really, you know, they were 1-2 or 1-3 in the draft? I can't remember if Houston traded up and picked that defensive player in second or third or what have you, but regardless, like, they were the two top quarterbacks of that draft. So I'm really interested to see whether or not you get into a situation where these careers are going to be tracked, and if people are going to look back saying, like, well, CJ Stroud was clearly number one.
Yeah. Unless something really pivots this year with Bryce Young, I think that is very quickly going to be the conversation.
Right.
And the Texans traded up and took the third pick as well, which they used on a defensive player. Just pulling that up there. Well, we already talked about him at the start of the episode, but Will Levis with the Tennessee Titans finished as the quarterback 33, was supposed to have been drafted in the first round, ended up being taken with the first pick of the second round. He only played in 9 games, and they weren't very good. He only averaged 13.1 fantasy points per game, but the Titans as a whole last year were just not good.
No, they weren't. I don't know where this guy's going with his career, but he's going to be the starter, I'm guessing, next year.
I think so.
I think so. In which case, they have like given him some weapons. Like if they are thinking he's going to do something, but I don't know. To me, I've never been a fan of this up and down kind of with young quarterbacks. Like I play him, you don't play him, you play him, don't play him. Like I think you need to decide. Okay, should we give him a season of Will Levis and just see how he does and let him lose the job if he loses the job, if he's absolutely terrible. But having rookies come in later, I don't know. To me, that's always backwards. I think you should give your rookie a chance at the beginning of the season and have a veteran sitting there in the wings who can jump in. But yeah, we'll see. If he's going to be the starter next year, then we might see kind of a full season out of him and be able to judge him.
Well, it's either him or Mason Rudolph, so I guess it's going to be him to start.
I would assume so, and I think that's the good plan. That's the way I would play it, is if you really do like this guy, and he was the big drop from last year's draft, that was something people were really keeping a track of, is he was dropping and dropping and dropping, I think that you let's give him a chance to see what happens.
Yeah. And you know Mason Rudolph's not the answer, so I'm hoping that's what they're going to do, but we'll see.
Mason Rudolph is one of those, like, yeah, okay, serviceable backup, but you can't rely on him to drive your team.
No, definitely not. Dorian Thompson-Robinson with the Cleveland Browns finished as the quarterback 57. He only started 3 games, averaged 7 points per game, threw 1 touchdown to 4 interceptions. So about as bad as you could really do in your start to the NFL. And I'm just looking at the Browns depth chart right now, and he is listed as the quarterback number 4. So I don't think we'll be talking much about him anymore.
Yeah, I think that he's not going to go anywhere. Like, yeah. I really don't see anything there. Didn't even remember him, I'll be honest.
Me either. Had to double check who he played for.
Yep, I think that's very fair.
Aiden O'Connell with the Las Vegas Raiders, to round out the last of our quarterbacks, finishes the quarterback 28. He started 11 games, kind of the same as Will Levis, only averaging around 13 fantasy points a game. The situation in Las Vegas last season was not great. Yeah, you got a head coach change halfway through, quarterback changes all the time. I think he is projected to be the starter moving forward for next year, but we'll see if the offense can kind of pull itself together a bit.
Yeah, you got to see what's going to happen with that team. I mean, they've lost a lot. I don't know what they've got left in the tank, really.
Yeah, we'll see what magic Davante Adams can pull.
It's not the, I don't know. I don't think on his own. I don't think I really, that's the one change that sort of left at the receiving core that I'm looking at going, why is he still there? Like of all players that you'd want, that maybe would want a change of scenery now, or that you might actually be able to get some assets for, I'm surprised that there wasn't a thought to move him. I mean, again, maybe there was, and all there was a second round draft pick next year. And because every other team has a little bit more intelligence than the Buffalo Bills, they just thought like, well, okay, let's keep the talent then, as opposed to a second round draft pick a year from now.
Just trying to think. Who else do they have besides Devontae? Oh, they have Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, Myers is still there. Jacobs is gone. I mean, I guess they're going with this young quarterback.
Yeah.
So I guess he technically has like 2 decent receivers to throw the ball to. But again, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like this team right now is making a lot of noise. But
yeah, I don't have a good gut feeling moving forward, you know? I don't know. I'm not in on the Raiders this year personally. All right, well, let's move on to running backs. We got a couple of big names here at the start. So we had Bijan Robinson with the Atlanta Falcons, finishes the RB9. The major now, if you were following last year, it was extremely frustrating with Bijan Robinson because of how inconsistently they used him. And quite frankly, really the vast majority of his value came through the passing game, like 58 receptions, pretty good. Highest among the rookies, I believe. And it was just frustrating because he was doing well when he had the ball. They just wouldn't give it to him. Like, he averaged 4.6 yards per carry behind an offense that was not functioning very well at all outside of him, and Arthur Smith just decided not to use him.
Yeah.
Like, I think if they relied on him in, like, a Christian McCaffrey kind of role, like, I genuinely think he could have been a top three running back last year.
Well, I mean, it was the constant discussion of, like, what are you thinking? Like, what, we're not, we talk about this on the show all the time. We're not coaches. We know that. But the decision-making there just didn't make any sense to me. Like, just the way you were using clearly talent. And again, I thought regardless, like, listen, if you don't have a good quarterback, you're not going to go anywhere. But if you have talent at the running back, it shouldn't matter that much. Like, you should still be able to do, like, a more variety of things. And the coaching decisions, there's a few coaches I want to talk about in terms of their use of rookies, but it just, there's a few decisions that I was just like, I don't get it. I don't get what you're doing.
Yeah. Like you said, we're not coaches, but sometimes it just seems so obvious. Like, it almost seems like, are we missing something? Like, is it, or are you just, like, that blind to it? Like, because one of us is wrong here, and it sure seems like it's not us based on how your team's performing. But maybe there's something behind the scenes that we're not aware of. Because, like, I don't think they're intentionally trying to be bad at their job. And I'm sure there's someone out there being like, hey, like, somebody in the organization being like, hey, maybe you should use this player a bit more. Like, our drives are always working when we're involving them. But I don't know. But you're right. There are a few coaches out there who don't really rely on rookies that well, or specific players. Like, they kind of, like, I don't, like I've said, I am a Patriots fan, but they don't rely on specific players. Like, they function as a team. Super frustrating for fantasy, but if it's working, it's working. If it's not working, then that's kind of when you got to turn to your all-stars, you know?
Yeah. You, like, that's what normally you would think is the common sense thing. It's like, okay, things aren't working, so I'm going to rely on my stars to try to help me get out of this and at least salvage some games, keep things close. But there, yeah, the common sense, I think, is more what I think was missing. So even though we're not coaches and we don't see all the behind the scenes nuance, and we might not understand all the intricacies of the strategies that they employ, we do know what common sense is. And to me, common sense is, you have a weaker quarterback, you've got maybe some rookies, young players in other positions, but you've got this hotshot rookie running back. Let's see what he can do. Let's put him in a bunch of different looks and situations and see what he can do and see exactly how he can kind of potentially drive play for us, because all the talent in the world is there.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the list here. There's a couple that kind of fall under that category of, they probably should have been used a bit more in their situation.
I think so, because don't you think in the new situation you look at certain players differently? Because even if you don't know the coach 100%, you just know it's a new situation. So that makes you feel a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the next one. Jahmyr Gibbs with the Detroit Lions. He finished as the RB10. He had 52 receptions, double-digit touchdowns, 5.2 yards per carry. I think the only thing really that limited him, and not even through a fault of his own or through the coach, is just that David Montgomery was there and also having a great season. That was a rare time where you had two running backs doing amazing on the field, two different ways. Like, Jahmyr Gibbs was fast, Montgomery was strong, two different styles, but both were working and letting the offense run. So it was just a unfortunate, I guess, for Jahmyr Gibbs, because he could have easily been, I would say, probably a top two running back, really, if he didn't have to share all that work with Montgomery. But instead, he was number 10, Montgomery was number 9. Like, it just worked. It was one of those weird times where it worked, sharing the load that like that.
Yeah, it was a big part of their success as a team, was the fact they had this sort of dual running back combo that even when one running back came out of a drive, you couldn't assume that they were going to start passing, which often with other teams, you can kind of predict, like, okay, well, they're bringing in the second guy, so there's no worry here. So yeah, they were definitely both successful. He more suffered from another running back was also doing the job very well. It will be interesting to see what happens this next year for him. Like, this is, it'll just be interesting moving forward. Even this team, I think the Lions are a team to really look at and see, like, okay, you had a great year. I think maybe they caught some people off guard. They did some things that the franchise hasn't done forever. Okay, now what happens? Did they catch lightning in a bottle, or are they for real?
I think they're for real, personally. And I'm very interested to see how Jahmyr Gibbs does this season. But I think that the Lions just as a whole are for real. This next running back was also part of a running back pair that was basically the inverse of how that one worked out. So this was Zach Charbonnet with the Seattle Seahawks. He finishes the RB47. I didn't like this pick when the Seahawks made it, because they had Kenneth Walker, who he looked great when he took over for Rashad Penny. It seemed like they had their running back. I didn't understand why they took Charbonnet as well, because I kind of figured this is what was going to happen. It hurt both of them, mostly Charbonnet, because he's not going to usurp Kenneth Walker, and he just took away some opportunities from Kenneth Walker. He didn't do bad with the work that he got. Like, he averaged over 4 yards a carry. He was involved in the passing game, but just the Seahawks weren't using him very much. And then they used him enough to take away from Kenneth Walker. So it was kind of a lose-lose. And I don't see that changing moving forward.
No, it was an odd pick. And I do remember you mentioning that last year when we recapped the draft. Like, I remember this one specifically because Kenneth Walker had just come off a pretty good year. So it was a bit of an odd decision to do that. I don't think he really, like you're saying, I don't think he really has much of an upside for next year, because, like, what's going to change? Kenneth Walker III is still pretty young. Like, it's not as though he's a veteran, right? So yeah, I don't know what exactly their plans are there.
Yeah, I don't get it either. But unless there's a major injury to Kenneth Walker, which I hope there isn't, I don't see a path really forward for Charbonnet at this point.
No, not right now.
No. Kendre Miller, the New Orleans Saints, finishes the RB71. Forgot that he was in the NFL, I'll be honest. Only played 8 games. He, I don't think, has much of a future either until maybe after Alvin Kamara is gone. Even then we're kind of getting into that. Well, now he's a couple years in the NFL. Are they just going to draft somebody new and kind of replace him? And he's also got Jamal Williams to compete with for, like, goal line work and stuff. He's not in a good situation either. And he failed to break 4 yards per carry last year, so he wasn't even very efficient with the work that he did manage to get.
Yeah.
Now, this next running back, he was splitting work as well. Very, very productive with the work that he was given. That's Devon Achane with the Miami Dolphins, finishes the running back 24, even though he only played in 11 games due to injury. He had double-digit touchdowns, averaged almost 8 yards per carry, which is crazy in the NFL, but just a testament to his speed, how agile he is when he gets out in the open field. Unfortunately, he's kind of in a Charbonnet situation as well, where he's splitting work with Raheem Mostert, who they're bringing back this year. They reworked his contract, I think, or I can't remember. Did he re-sign?
Yeah, I think he re-signed.
he's going to be with them this year, one way or the other. And we're going to see maybe they can kind of mimic what the Lions did, have like a little thunder lightning situation where they both do well. But unfortunately, last year, it kind of seemed like one would do really well until they got hurt. Then the other one would take over and do really well until they got hurt. And then the first one would come back. They weren't really able to both do well at the same time.
Yeah, they both had good seasons respectively, like when they played, but not at the same time.
Yeah, which kind of complicates things as a fantasy manager, because you know that if the other one's healthy, unless your guy is the guy with the hot hand at the time, then you're kind of, you might as well just keep him on your bench. But at the same time, if the other player gets hurt halfway through the game and he's sitting on your bench, you might have just had 20-something points sitting on your bench. So it's a difficult, difficult situation. But yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get a bit more clarity as we approach the season of, okay, this is our guy and we have a clear backup or a clear third down back, something like that. But right now it's just pretty much up in the air.
Yeah.
Tank Bigsby with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He finishes the running back 87. He only averaged 2.6 yards per carry, which is not good. So you want to see your running back at least break 4 yards per carry to show that he's making the most of his carries, that he's being productive when he has the ball. Tank Bigsby, nowhere near that. They were feeding Travis Etienne the ball. I don't really know why they brought Tank in if they were clearly going to use Tank Travis Etienne that much. I don't see much of a future for Tank there either with Etienne hogging that many carries.
Yeah, I don't see it.
And the last running back is Tajay Spears with the Tennessee Titans. Finishes the RB35 behind Derrick Henry. Well involved in the passing game, 52 receptions, averaged over 4.5 yards per carry, only 3 touchdowns because the touchdowns were going Derrick Henry's way, and the touchdowns were hard to come by in Tennessee last year anyways. Henry's gone, and yeah. I kind of thought that that would have meant, okay, it's Tajay Spears' time. But they decided to bring in Tony Pollard instead. So now Tajay Spears is the backup again, unless he can take over the lead back spot from Tony Pollard.
Well, I don't know about the lead back spot, but I do wonder if the plan is to lighten the load a bit and give Spears some opportunity, maybe a little bit more than he had this year. Could be off base there, but I don't know. You never know. You never know what's going to happen. I think the Titans, they're such an interesting team to me with the young quarterback, with being able to be like, okay, we're transitioning out of Henry, but we're not going to rebuild. We're going to throw Pollard in there and we're going to grab a receiver and we're going to do these things to try to like stay competitive. I don't know if they feel, is Spears a part of that? Is he not a part of that? I think, yeah, those are interesting questions. I just wonder, will they maybe try to work him in a little bit more? I don't know.
I hope so, because he was pretty good when he had the ball last season. But I could see them probably just using him as a third down back, because he was very good in the passing game. They brought in Tony Pollard, so I imagine that you're going to want him for their first and second down work. Which, I mean, still has its place in fantasy, but it certainly is a blow to what he could have done.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the wide receivers. Jackson Smith and Jigbo with the Seattle Seahawks finished as wide receiver 48. This was another pick I did not like for the Seahawks.
That's so random.
I didn't like their draft last year at all.
They've got such a loaded receiving core to begin with. Like it just even him playing last year. Like yeah, he made some catches. He did some good things. He's clearly a talented receiver. But it's like he's not going to outplay Metcalf and Lockett.
No.
What are you doing?
Until one of them leaves, yeah, he might be the
best third wide receiver in the league, though, right now.
He might be. Yep, that is accurate. But unfortunately, not very good for fantasy.
Trade him to the Bills.
There you go. Yeah, the Bills would take him. Jordan Addison with the Minnesota Vikings finishes the wide receiver 21. Had 70 receptions, was averaging 13 yards per receptions, got double-digit touchdowns. Just got 10. He had a pretty good season to kind of turn it on. About what I expected, really, for being with Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
I think it probably would have been better if they kept Kirk all season and they hadn't lost him to injury, but
yes.
Still, he made the most of it. I don't know. I don't know what I think his season's going to look like going forward without Kirk Cousins, but and whoever they have throwing the ball to him, but I don't know. I mean, I think he's kind of in the same position as Jackson Smith and Jigba, where he's kind of the third option behind Jefferson and TJ Hawkinson. But he did more, I guess. He made himself more of a target.
Yeah.
So we'll see who they bring in and see if he can kind of replicate that next season.
Yes, definitely.
Quinton Johnston, LA Chargers, finishes wide receiver 75. He's also went to a team where they already had an established wide receiver core pair. But now he's the last man standing of those three. So who knows what the future is going to bring with him.
Well, that they all right. As of today, before a week before the draft, he's it, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's their guy.
He's their the receiver. Only
one. Like, let's just see here.
They're going to draft a receiver. They're going to draft a receiver.
It's him and Josh Palmer.
Yeah.
Who is not. So it's him. It's Quentin Johnson until the draft where I imagine they will draft a wide receiver. And then he can fight it out with the rookie and we'll see. But his fantasy outlook did a 180 in the past month with Mike Williams and Keenan Allen both leaving, because he went from like dead in the water for the future to he's it. So I'm very interested to see where that goes. Zay Flowers at the Baltimore Ravens finishes wide receiver 30. How do you feel about Zay Flowers?
I feel like he was an up and down, like, fantasy player where he had a couple flashes. And I feel like he's got the talent to say moving forward he's going to be a big part of any team that he's on. I don't really know enough about where Baltimore is kind of headed. I think they're looking like a good team. I think they've got especially with the changes they made, they're an offensively strong team. I just don't know. Is he, what target number is he on this team when Lamar Jackson does finally go to throw the ball? Is he two? Is he three? Like, I think he's got all the potential. Is right there.
I think he could be number one. I guess Andrews? Probably number. No, I was gonna say out of the receivers, he'd be one. Yeah, but behind Andrews, yeah, I'd say number two.
And okay, so if he can really establish himself as that go to receiver, then I think he's got a lot of value. But I still think this is a run first offense. Regardless of what they say, either through the running backs or through their quarterback.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Marvin Mims, Denver Broncos, finishes wide receiver 93. He didn't do anything, and we're running out of time, so we're just going to skip over him. Rashi Rice turned it on towards the end. Finished wide receiver 27, showed a bit of a click there with Patrick Mahomes, but unfortunately, with the whole legal situation, he might be fine for this season. He might not be. At some point, if he's convicted or going to court for this, the shoe's going to drop with the NFL, and he's going to miss some time. We'll see what that is, what kind of an impact that is going to be. So, if he's playing, I think the future is bright for him. He's part of an elite Super Bowl dynasty era. But it all depends on what the NFL dishes out as a punishment to him.
Yeah. Yeah. That really will be the deterrent, because again, a player who definitely could be on the rise. And there are questions. There are now questions as to where the NFL is going to go from here and what will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, that's something we can only speculate at for right now. Puka Nacua with the Los Angeles Rams finishes the wide receiver 4. came out of nowhere last year, over 1,400 yards, over 100 receptions, six touchdowns, 89 rushing yards. Like, he was involved all over the place. One of the steals of last season. The future is very bright for him, even with Cooper Kupp there to compete for targets.
It's a good 1-2 punch. And some teams, even for fantasy, have proven with good offenses, you can have two solid players in a receiving core, even for fantasy, and it can work. It can be efficient.
Yep.
I think the future is bright here. He stepped up. He replaced Cooper Kupp when they needed him to. I think he's in a good position to be a top pick this year in for fantasy.
Absolutely. Tank Dell with the Houston Texans finished at wide receiver 38. Unfortunately, he only played 11 games due to injury. Was pretty hit and miss with the competition there with Nico Collins. And now, unfortunately, he's going to have, once he's back from his ankle injury, he's going to also have to compete with Stephon Diggs now. So that's a bit of a blow to him. Like we talked about before, bit of a boost to CJ Stroud. Yes. I don't know what the future holds for Tank Dell. I think that's going to be one of those. You're going to have to just call your shot and say, okay, who's going to be the top dog?
I have a prediction.
Yeah.
Tank Dell coming back from injury. He's obviously, like, I don't know if he's going to miss games or whatever's going to happen here, but it might be like a slow whatever. Soon as they cut Stephon Diggs, it'll be back to Dalton Collins. Like, I honestly think Diggs is very much a one-year thing.
Okay, so you think he'll be kind of behind the scenes for this year and then back to the forefront?
That's right. And it's even possible that Diggs falls out of favor with them late in the year, midway through the season, whatever. Like, things could happen. But I do think for this year, for 2024, it'll be Diggs and Collins kind of 1-2. But Tank Dell will eventually work his way back into the 3 slot, and then he'll be back to right there with Nico Collins for the year after, for 2025. That's my prediction. I think Diggs is gone after 1 year.
All right. We had Jaden Reed of the Green Bay Packers. He finished at wide receiver 23. And we had Josh Downs with the Indianapolis Colts, finished wide receiver 46, both in crowded receiver rooms, both kind of fighting to try to make an impact. Josh Downs competing with Michael Pittman Jr., Alec Pierce. Jaden Reed's competing with Christian Watson. And who was the other? Who's the third one there?
There's a third
Romeo Dobbs. Romeo Dobbs, yeah. That's who it is. Yeah. Both of them are basically just competing. The future's kind of muddled there because somebody's eventually going to establish himself as the alpha in that receiver core, but we didn't see it last year, so it's another year of who knows what we're going to get.
Yeah, and I definitely think that there's a possibility that someone like Reed or Downs could end up becoming more than they are, but you're right, it's crowded receiving cores right now. I think because they're all young, with young quarterbacks, time is what we need to tell what those offenses look like.
Yeah. And we'll move on to the tight ends to round out the show. So we had Michael Mayer with the Las Vegas Raiders, who finished as the tight end 32. I think he could have had a better season if the Raiders offense was able to click more last year, because the opportunities were there. He was averaging 11.3 yards per reception. They were using him more down the field than any other tight end that was a rookie, but he was getting less than 2 receptions a game. So the opportunities down the field were there, but they weren't targeting him for whatever reason. You need those targets as a tight end, unfortunately, to be relevant.
Yep.
Sam Laporta with the Detroit Lions finished as the tight end 1. My boy, he was averaging 5 receptions a game. He had 10 touchdowns, averaging double digit yards per reception. All the things that you want to look for. We've spoke about Sam Laporta plenty throughout the season. I think the future's bright there for him. Yep. He's established himself as a reliable tight end for you.
On a good team.
On a good team, a good offense that's willing to use him. Like, that's all you can ask for. Dalton Kincaid with the Buffalo Bills finishes tight end 11. He was averaging 4.5 receptions a game, averaging 9 yards per reception. He had 73 receptions on the year, but he only had 2 touchdowns. So unfortunately, they weren't using him in the end zone. Maybe that will change now with Diggs gone. Maybe it won't. The Buffalo Bills offense confuses me a lot of the time.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen now that they don't have like a receiving core. I have no idea if their plan is to use these tight ends more or not. It's, again, it's not a good thing that the numbers you just rattle off equals tight end 11. It still means there are maybe 6 tight ends in the NFL that's worth having in fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. Luke Musgrave with the Green Bay Packers finished at tight end 30. He was only having averaging 3 receptions a game. He only played 11 games on the year. But like we talked about with Jalen Reed there, with that crowded wide receiver core, I mean, he's just one more hand in the pot. You know, it's hard to really make anything a name for yourself when you're competing with that many other targets. And same goes for Luke Schoonmaker with the Dallas Cowboys. He finished as a tight end 63. He was averaging less than half of a reception per game last year. So he was not involved at all.
It's probably as good as I could do, honestly. My kind of stat line.
If we trotted out on the field, that's probably some stat lines we would get. Absolutely. 8 receptions on the year, played every game. They just weren't using him. He's their second tight end, and it shows with those numbers. So unless something changes there, I assume he's going to continue to kind of be irrelevant for fantasy as long as Jake Ferguson's still with the Cowboys. So, and CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Cooks taking targets ahead of Ferguson. So that leaves little for Schoonmaker, unfortunately. But that is it for the 2023 class of rookies. In 10 days from the day of our recording, it is the NFL draft. Tune in next week and we will be doing a mock draft in honor of the NFL draft. Thanks for joining us. Take care. Stay safe.